Good afternoon and welcome to the lunchroom on Radio Caribbean International. It is Wednesday, the 28th of May, 2025, and it is program number 1380 of the lunchroom. And I'm your host, Calix George Jr. Now, of course, in addition to Radio 101.1 FM, you can also get us at our website. It is www.rcistlucia.com. And we are also streaming live on Facebook. You just have to search for the official page of Radio Caribbean International. And please be sure to like and share that as well with your friends and family. The number to call in to tell us what's on your plate today, it is 452-3046. Again, 452-3046. Again, 452-3046. And we also have our WhatsApp number. That is 724-0008. Again, 724-0008. We've got a bit of a packed show today. We're first going to be doing our dish of the day and then taking in Republic Corner, and that's slated to happen in about 10 minutes. And then at around 1:30, after our weather report, we're going to be doing an interview with the incoming chief executive officer, incoming CEO of West Indies Cricket. And he's no stranger to cricket. Some of you would have known the name. He is Mr. Chris Daring. And he's going to be our interviewee at about 1:30 this afternoon. So hope you can join us for that. First, some birthday greetings going out to Dr. Erdell Morris. Happy, happy birthday to you. Hoping that you're having a very blessed and wonderful birthday celebration. We also want to send our birthday greetings to Tasha Lawrence. Happy, happy birthday to you. And we do hope that you're having a wonderful day. And also to Mr. Alistair Albert. Happy, happy birthday to you, sir. Hoping that your birthday is going wonderful as well. A look back in time, and this is a pretty interesting date. It's the 585 BC, actually, on this day. A solar eclipse, as predicted by Greek philosopher Thales, occurred while Lydians were at war with the Medes, and that led to a truce. And it is one of the cardinal dates from which other dates in antiquity are calculated. In the year 1431, Joan of Arc was accused of relapsing into heresy by donning male clothing again, providing justification for her execution. In the year 1588, on this day, King Philip II of Spain dispatched an armada under the Duke of Medina Sidonia from Lisbon, Portugal, to invade England. Of course, that was not very successful. And in the year 1830, U.S. President Andrew Jackson signed the Indian Removal Act, a key law leading to the forced removal of the Cherokee, Chickasaw, Choctaw, Cree, as well as Seminole tribes out of Georgia and the surrounding states, setting the stage for the Cherokee Trail of Tears. In 1936, on this day, Alan Turing submitted what was known as Uncomputable Numbers for publication, in which he set out the theoretical basis for modern computers. And in 1972, on this day, White House plumbers, as they were known, first broke in at the Democratic National Headquarters and installed listening devices at the Watergate complex in Washington, D.C. We now head across to our dish of the day. The Daily Dish is brought to you the kind compliments of our good friends at Tiles Plus.
One test for your home, I see. Bathroom, kitchen, pantry. Need tests for your balcony. Come down to Tiles Plus, satisfaction guarantee. Tiles Plus, Tiles Plus, Tiles Plus. Big test with unbeatable cost. Customer service, A+, did all kind of tests. Come down to Tiles Plus. We also got glassware and vanity. Boss, boss, you'll see. Come down, don't mind nobody. We got the best tiles on island. Trust me. We are located Lance Road in Castries, Bosses, you Grozy Lakes, and Slack Street in Dufort. Telephone number 453-7939.
Serving now, the Daily Dish.
And welcome back to our program. Very short dish of the day for today because we don't have a great deal of time. And just wanted to touch on a few of the happenings right about now. It seems as there is a bit of a stir up as a result of tensions with truckers and, of course, the St. Lucia Air and Seaports Authority, particularly with respect to the situation regarding the port of Castries. Of course, cargo is, in fact, the leading, and that cargo operation, I should say, is actually one of the leading areas for SLASPA's profitability, far more than the other sectors of its business. Of course, it handles both air and seaports, but in fact, it is that of the cargo operation, specifically, of course, that in the port of Castries that allows SLASPA to be profitable. And we did see a lot of challenges, and we have been seeing challenges with respect to the operation at Port Castries. And of course, part of the major challenge is the limitation in terms of space. That port, of course, was expanded back in the late 1960s, I do believe. And that was at a time when, prior to that, of course, a lot of the trade that was coming in would have been in barrels, and we saw a shift in how goods were in fact being shipped around the world. We saw container cargo becoming the lead means by which the goods were being moved around the world. And as a result of that, we saw the filling up and reclamation of lands towards what was then known as the Western Wharf for Castries. And in fact, that was the principal waterfront for Castries. Castries was really a west-facing town, and that area in the vicinity of where we have the old Peter and Company building was the effectively the downtown, the waterfront, the old Prince Alfred Basin. That all got filled up and to create a space for a cargo port, as well, of course, for ancillary sheds for dry goods and what have you. But the reality is, of course, the port of Castries has certainly outlived to a great extent the amount of space that is available. It's only about 16 acres. And it is terribly inadequate, even when you consider that even the area that was built for the banana operations, that too is being used up for cargo as well and is completely inadequate. So we do, of course, empathize with the truckers and the ongoing challenges, of course, in terms of managing that situation. We'll hopefully be able to talk a little bit more about that maybe on a subsequent program. Of course, that's our dish of the day. And we're going to head across to try to take in our Republic Corner.
This has been The Daily Dish.
One test for your home, I see. Bathroom, kitchen, pantry. Need test for your balcony. Come down to Test Plus, satisfaction guarantee. Test Plus, Test Plus, Test Plus. Big test, you fund, big trouble cost. Customer service, A plus, did all kind of tests. Come down to Test Plus. We also got glass, and vanity. Boss, boss, you'll see. Come down, don't mind nobody. We got the best test on island. Trust me. We are located Land Street in Castries, Bossage, Grozy Lanes, and Slack Street in Viewfort. Telephone number 453-7939. Test Plus.
And welcome back to the lunchroom here at the Radio Caribbean International. And of course, as I mentioned, every Wednesday we are taking in a Republic Corner. And it is all about Republic Bank Eastern Caribbean Limited. And for this edition, it's actually our third edition of Republic Corner, And we want to focus on Republic Bank's corporate social responsibility. And they're doing that principally through a flagship program called The Power to Make a Difference. And that program was launched back for the Eastern Caribbean in the year 2022, in fact, August of 2022, to be more specific. And Power to Make a Difference is all about empowering communities, advancing social equity, and supporting sustainable development. Now, the deadlines for submitting proposals for the Power to Make a Difference program is, in fact, June the 10th, 2025. It's an annual process, and this year, the date for deadline for submitting proposals through this program is actually June the 10th of 2025. I think there might be an ad out there actually suggesting it was yesterday. It is not. It's actually June the 10th. So there is still time for individuals in civil society, groups, associations to be able to, in fact, submit through this program their interested proposals if they believe that they want to access funding to make an impact at the community level. Now, to tell us all about this program from Republic Bank, we're so very pleased that we have Ronisha Emmanuel. She is the marketing specialist at Republic Bank EC Limited. Ronisha, how are you doing this afternoon?
I'm good. I hope you're doing well.
I am very good. Thank you. Thanks for asking. Now, of course, I think lots of people shouldn't by now have a pretty good idea about the Power to Make a Difference program. There are lots of ads promoting it. And of course, it has been happening already. People should by now have seen some of the impacts of the program. But for those who don't know, tell us, what is the Power to Make a Difference program all about?
I'd be happy to tell you more about PMAD, as we call it within the bank, Power to Make a Difference. So this is actually, like you rightfully mentioned earlier, our flagship program, and it speaks to our corporate and social responsibility as a bank. So even though we launched in 2022 within the Eastern Caribbean, this entire program, PMAD itself, has been a part of the wider bank from 2003. So I started in Trinidad in 2003, and we adopted it for the Eastern Caribbean back in 2022. So this year marks our third cycle of the program, and we are elated for new organizations to come on board. The idea behind PMAD is simple but powerful. It's about creating long-term positive change within our communities, and the program focuses on sustainable development, promoting social equity, and empowering people to build better futures. Now, with that in mind, better futures, you can accomplish that by many ways. However, for us, we have four main pillars, and that's power to learn, power to help, power to care, and the power to succeed. So that encapsulates what PMAD is all about.
Wonderful. So that's very broad. Lots of opportunities there for individuals who want to make a difference and might be at the community level. And it's not just about sustainable development. I mean, that's a big one, SDGs and what we can do at the local level. But it's also about equity, as you said, about learning, about helping, about caring. So lots of areas to, in fact, make an impact. Now, tell us, who can actually apply under this PMAD, Power to Make a Difference program?
That's a great question. And PMAD is open to a wide range of change makers. If you're listening and you are part of a civil society organization or a registered NGO, or maybe a community-based group or an advocacy organization, you're encouraged to apply. The main requirements are that your organization is legally registered. So that's the first thing. From there, you will also need to ensure you have a detailed project proposal that you are ready to submit upon application, as well as the relevant supporting documents. And the list of required documents can be found on our website under the application process tab. So you will visit www.republicbankstlucia.com/pmap.
Okay, wonderful. And of course, it's important that individuals are registered. I know the Ministry of Equity here in St. Lucia registers NGOs, non-governmental organizations, Kwangos, a whole host of community-based organizations. So, of course, that should be in order and, of course, as part of your requirements. Now, tell us, what kind of projects does Power to Make a Difference support?
So, like I mentioned previously, remember we have four pillars, right?
Right.
But there are different aspects under those four pillars that we support. So when you look at the power to learn, that was the first pillar. We focus on youth development, education, and also celebrating culture and arts. Then we have power to care, which supports health-related initiatives as well as projects that care for, let's say, the elderly and the differently abled. We move to power to help, and that speaks to poverty alleviation as well as assisting those who are socially marginalized, those in our community who often need a helping hand the most, you know. And finally, power to succeed. And that focuses on the development of sports, protecting the environment, and fostering entrepreneurial growth. So whether you're working on a wellness program, a youth mentorship initiative, or green innovation project, as long as it supports one of these core focus areas and creates positive change within your community and within the country, it's something we'd love to support under our PMAT program. Now, I think I just want to delve into an example
to give
our listeners, you know, a bit more context. So one of my favorite examples for St. Lucia is under Power to Succeed, and that is with the National Grassroots Learn to Swim program, and that was led by the St. Lucia Aquatics Federation. I'm sure you've heard of them before.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So this initiative was created to address the widespread fear of water and reducing the risk of drowning.
Right.
And that aimed particularly to tackle the financial barriers that often prevent access to swimming lessons. Because for those of us who were not fortunate enough to have an uncle or a father to throw us in the deep and say, find your way back, other people may have to learn how to swim at a different stage in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
So focusing on community-based education and water safety was a paramount concern for this organization and this program. And it empowered local families to embrace aquatic environments as well as the safety involved and being confident around water.
So that's fantastic.
Yeah, so that is my favorite go-to example for St. Lucia. And it speaks to promoting well-being and inclusivity across communities. So that is an example.
And also preserving life as well. Tangible way, and trying that people can, in fact, swim and maybe in some instances, making sure that they can actually jump in when they see somebody in distress. So really, really wonderful example there. And I'm sure there are many others.
We all live on an island.
Surrounded by water. So might be useful, definitely, to be able to swim. And I know there's so many other examples that you can certainly share with us, you know, from aquaponics to renewable energy and STEM training. Mm-hmm. There's so many other things that this program has, in fact, impacted.
We've done a lot of work in St. Lucia. We partnered with a lot of organizations. We have the Darren Sammy Foundation as well.
Right.
The list is too numerous to mention.
Wow. So this is a really great opportunity for a lot of NGOs out there. We really hope they're listening and already probably heading across to the website to check out all the details there, because this is an opportunity to really make a difference at so many different levels for individuals and for communities. But tell us, though, how much funding can applicants receive under the Power to Make a Difference program?
Ooh, that's a nice question. So for selected applicants, there's actually no fixed minimum or maximum amount.
Wow, okay.
What we look at is the scope of the project and its impact and how well it aligns with the PMAD goals that I mentioned earlier. So if you are hitting the nail right on the head with one of those four pillars, and it may be a very small project within your nearby community, we will look at that. or if it's more on a national scale, we look at that as well. So we've supported everything from small grassroots efforts to larger multi-year initiatives. And the idea is to meet communities where they are and give them the support they need to grow. So don't be discouraged if your project is small. We're just as interested in high-impact local initiatives as we are in large-scale programs. What matters most is the difference you're aiming to make. And we've partnered with organizations one-off for one cycle. And we've also had partners that have been on board from the very start. Mm-hmm. And they just resubmit an application and we just continue the work. And Optronics is a good example
right.
of one of those partners we've had since inception in back in 2022.
Now, that was one of the questions I was actually going to ask as a follow-up in terms of, do you roll over? There's a need that continues and you need like maybe 3-4 Correct. Years to be able Correct. To actually... make the kind of impact that you're seeing. And you, in fact, are saying that you do that, just that. So you're not just looking at a one-off wonder. You actually are willing to work with NGOs to really develop or make a real impact over time.
Yeah, definitely. And most of our current partners are recurring partners. So now some of these projects are coming to completion. So now is the time where we want new organizations to come on board because we have the capacity to nurture our existing partners as well as to bring new ones on board.
That's really awesome. Fantastic. Now, of course, I did mention earlier on in the beginning that I think originally the deadline was supposed to have been yesterday. But there's mm-hmm. been a shift, there's been a change, and a wonderful opportunity, no doubt, for some of these mm-hmm. new entrants who want to make a submission. There's still time. Tell us a little bit about the timing and what has to happen.
Yeah, you're right. The initial deadline was May 27th, that was yesterday, but we've extended the deadline to June 10th. We understand that putting together a proposal takes time. It takes resources, it takes effort. And we want to give organizations the chance to refine their plans and gather all the necessary documents. So when they come to us, it is a substantial document that holds weight and we can hit the ground running. So there is still time, but please do not wait until the last minute.
Okay, wonderful. That's very good news. And you've got about, 14 days maybe or thereabouts just to... to get that submission done. And of course, you're right, it does take lots of input and documentation, but of course it's for a worthy cause. And so let's hope that the NGOs out there, community-based groups can in fact get those submissions in. Now, where can people go to get more information? They want things clarified. How do they approach this in the next couple of days?
The best place to start is our website. That's www.republicbankec.com. Once there, choose your country and navigate to the Making a Difference section. So when you land on the website, you go to the top, you select St. Lucia, and from there you'll find all the details about PMAD, including the required supporting documents as well as the application form. Now, if you have any questions, you can email us at rbecpmad@rfhl.com. That's RBEC. PMAD@RFHL.com. And of course, you're always welcome to visit your nearest branch, whether you're in Beaufort, Castries, or Rodney Bay, and we'll be more than happy to assist you in person.
Okay, wonderful. That's really good news, of course. And I'm sure you'll be available, Renisha, to ensure that
they can reach me, definitely, and we'll be able to assist.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Mm-hmm. And it has been a pleasure speaking with you. And we really do hope that individuals out there are going to take up this opportunity. It is a wonderful opportunity being offered by Republic Bank as part of its corporate social responsibility and ensuring that it is making a difference through you, through these various your community groups and NGOs on the ground. So thank you so very much, of course, on behalf of Republic Bank. Thank you. What you're doing in terms of making all of this happen. Any parting words from you?
No. First of all, thank you for having me. At Republic Bank, we truly believe in the power of community, and The PMAD program is just one way we bring that philosophy to life. If you're listening and you're working on a project that can uplift others, now is the time to take that next step. We're here to support initiatives that are as out of the box and creative as you can think. We're looking for innovation, inclusivity, and impactfulness. So don't hesitate to reach out, ask questions, and most importantly, apply. Let's continue working together to make a difference, you know, one project, one community at a time.
Awesome. And of course, thank you so very much, Ronisha Emmanuel, Marketing Specialist at Republic Bank EC Limited. And we've been speaking on Republic Corner all about Republic Bank's Power to Make a Difference program. And the deadline for submissions it's June the 10th. So the countdown is now. You've gotten an extension. So make the most of it. Thank you so very much. And have a wonderful
day.
Take care. And of course, that has been our Republic Corner segment right here at the Lunchroom on Radio Caribbean International. We're going to segue across to taking our weather report now. And when we come back, we're going to be speaking with the incoming CEO of Republic Bank. The incoming CEO of West Indies Cricket, Mr. Chris Daring, in just a bit.
For the best price and the latest style, take a little drive down to Island Style Car.
We got the time to make you go. We got the time to make you say, quality race, service choice. It's all an Island Style.
Visit us at our showrooms in Belarusa, Rodney Bay, on the John Crompton Highway, Cass Street, and behind Ruby's Gas Station on the Library Viewfort Highway. Or call us on 450-452 or 453-TILE. Island Style, Tile and Bath. When you think tile, think Island Style.
This is Radio Caribbean International. It's now time for the weather news.
And that's all, of course, on the 1.4. It's now time for your weather report as of Tormund today, presented by Island Style Telemba. The forecast for St. Lucia Valley for the next 24 hours, winds will be blowing from between the east and east-northeast near 20 miles per hour or 31 kilometers per hour. The weather fair to occasionally cloudy with a few brief showers. And there is an advisory in air rate. Small craft operators and sea beavers are advised to exercise caution due to brisk winds and above normal seas. The forecast for the Les Antilles fair to occasionally cloudy with widely scattered showers. And the weather summary, the Atlantic high pressure system will continue to generate moderate to brisk easterly winds and above normal seas across the eastern Caribbean region during the next few days. Patches of low-level clouds drifting along the wind flow will cause a few showers over the Les Antilles during the forecast period. Also, a tropical wave located a few hundred... A tropical wave located a few hundred miles east of the Windward Islands is moving westward near 50 miles per hour or 24 kilometers per hour. This wave is expected to affect mostly the southern half of the Lesser Antilles from tomorrow. Another tropical wave located over the western tropical Atlantic is also moving westward near 50 miles per hour or 24 kilometers per hour. And this was your weather forecast as of 12 noon today, presented by Island Style Talamba.
This has been RCI's Weather News. For more information, call the Weather Hotline at 454-3452. RCI 101 number 1.
Island Style. We got the time to make you go. We got the time to make you say.
banking sets, fixes and ground. Everything you need to sort the house out. For the best price and the latest style, take a little drive down to Island Style Car.
We got the time to make you go. Oh. We got the time to make you say, quality, yeah. Price, service, choice. It's all an Island Style.
Visit us at our showrooms in Belarus and Rodney Bay on the John Crompton Highway, Cass Street, and behind Ruby's Gas Station on the Library Beaufort Highway. Or call us on 450-452 or 453 Tile. Island Style, Tile and Bath. When you think tile, think Island Style.
And welcome back to the Lunchroom on Radio Caribbean International. It's about 26 minutes before the hour of 2 o'clock. And we're so very pleased to have in studio with us Mr. Christopher Daring. That name is certainly well known in the cricket sphere. And he has returned to cricket in very many ways. And of course, so very pleased that you can join us in here. Now, the Chief Executive Officer of West Indies Cricket. Congratulations, first and foremost.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be back into West Indies Cricket and back in St. Lucia.
Wonderful. And of course, many would remember you from the time of Cricket World Cup 2007 and all the preparations that the Caribbean was actually doing, I think, at that time. A lot of excitement for cricket in the Caribbean.
Yeah, it was a mammoth undertaking. It was a real challenge because back then, you know, the world had no idea that we were capable of hosting the Cricket World Cup, and that was a battle in and of itself,
right?
To convince all the other countries of the ICC that we were capable of hosting it. And you know, at the end of the day, we delivered an event that they were proud of, and we were back then. I tease my colleagues now at Cricket West Indies. Back then, there was no real ICC as such. You were the ICC in terms of delivering the event. So you had to negotiate the television rights. You had to negotiate sponsorships.
Okay.
You had to build all the stadiums, run all the matches, etc. So you were doing it on behalf of all the members of the ICC.
Right.
So it was a special responsibility. And, you know, lots of legacy that we left behind, the ICC adopted as their formal documentation, for instance, and manuals and so on. It was a moment that the Caribbean can truly be proud of. No more so than St. Lucia, where you had Ernest Allaire was the chief
right back at that time, right?
Back then, yes. So he would have run the World Cup here in St. Lucia. And so it was a really fantastic event.
Yeah, and really transformational for so many islands.
All of our venues were refurbished, new stadiums built, an entire new infrastructure. The understanding of hosting global sporting events. So now nobody questions whether we can host.
Right.
It's just a matter of fact. Back then, it was a massive battle to convince the various countries that we were capable of hosting.
So very true. And it's almost 20 years now, believe it or not. Certainly, the environment for cricket has transformed, though, tremendously, even beyond...
The cricket industry has dramatically changed, you know. And I will be one of the first people to admit, and you know, I was a marketing-leaning person back then, and I remember the very first presentation of 2020 cricket, for instance, at the ICC. It was the English Cricket Board and so on. It's something that they were going to trial. And I looked on and I thought, what a gimmick.
Why, really?
You know,
and look at it now, right?
And you know, I grew up on the greats of Test cricket. You
yes.
know, the... You know, for me, Test cricket was just the ultimate.
You enjoyed the whole six-day test match with the break in between.
It was a test of my ability as well to party for 6 days or 5 days. You know, so, you know, it was really, you grew up on the legends of, you know, Greenidge and Haynes and Viv Richards and Clive Lloyd. And you knew the stories. Your parents would tell you the stories of Frank Worrell and, you know, the three W's and what they meant to the history of West Indies. Not just West Indies cricket, but the West Indies importance. You know, that victory in England in 1950 was, you know, I lived it as if I was there because through my parents would tell you, regale the stories of how it inspired them as, you know,
part of our identity,
part
proving
of our identity,
that we were equal
that we
or
were
better.
Equal to our colonial masters and we were better than them. And it inspired a whole movement in the Caribbean towards independence. So, I grew up on that. So to see T20 come along, that was just going to give this flashes of brilliance. Mm-hmm. But then I also recognize that the world of cricket actually owes the Caribbean a debt of gratitude, because limited overs came into being to force people to play the way the West Indies played anyway. That's how the limited overs came into being. They wanted a much more exciting form of cricket.
Right.
The West Indies played this just incredible brand of cricket, very swashbuckling. In a derogatory way, they referred to us as carnival cricket.
The pirates of Calypso of the cricket, right? Yeah, okay.
You know, Calypso cricket was this happy-go-lucky, sort of not serious enough to be able to compete in the test arena and so on. They were these are Calypso cricketers. Mm-hmm. Well, they then adopted everything that we did on the field, created limited overs cricket to imitate us. Then they imitated everything we did off the field, the partying in the stands. That was all started right here in the Caribbean. The music and so on, it never happened around the world. In fact, it was shunned around the world, shunned by some of the grounds in the Caribbean as well.
Yes.
But when we adopted it, you know, that's one thing we do. We know how to enjoy and celebrate the game.
Yeah, there's a long-standing joke here in St. Lucia that there's cricket's going on, but there are just as many people below the stands playing dominoes and dancing country and western and doing all sorts of things.
Well, I used to take 1 week of vacation a year. And I went to Antigua for cricket.
Oh, you're a gravy man.
For the party, for the gravy and the Chickies Hi-Fi. Then when I went to Western's Cricket Board, I said, I need to implement this everywhere. Mm. So I went around the Caribbean implementing party stands at every ground. The mound in Jamaica was one of my babies. And I used to tell people, look, we would sell 1,500 tickets to the mound every day of Test cricket. And it would be absolutely sold out. First stand at Sabina Park to sell out. But the ticket people, when they came around to do an audit, said, but the mound only holds 400 people. And I said, but did you measure the area behind the scoreboard? And they said, but nobody can see the cricket. I said, so what? People are buying tickets to come to the mound.
Right.
And in their heads, they're coming to cricket. Mm-hmm. And they're enjoying it just as much.
Yes.
Don't argue with them about who should be picked. And so on, versus who they will have their own opinions, but they're enjoying cricket their way.
Fantastic. And you really have brought out the cultural element of cricket being so important. But tell us, though, why would a Chris Daring want to return at this point, at this juncture in West Indies cricket?
So it's interesting. I never thought I would ever come back into West Indies cricket. I was living in Miami, in Florida. And they actually asked me to help them with the T20 World Cup.
Right.
So I helped Broward County. I co-chaired
Lauderhill and all that they're doing up there.
Correct. Mm-hmm. I co-chaired that committee. And you started to get this warmth and feeling that something that you missed. Especially, you know, being part of the Caribbean. For, 12 years, I became a Caribbean citizen. Mm-hmm. And once you're a Caribbean citizen, it's very difficult to replace that feeling. And so I started to get in touch with cricket again, you know, heading that organization. And then, of course, the current president actually reached out to me, out of the blue. So this is not a gentleman that I'd met before, to help on a particular issue. So you started to get pulled in again and get the feeling. And then I started to see what was happening with cricket in the rest of the world. I started to truly pay attention because of the Cricket World Cup. And I recognized that the industry was so dramatically growing and opportunities were abounding for everybody else in the world. Mm-hmm. And my part of the world, something that had given me so much joy, something that had helped to mold my entire life, was being left behind. Mm-hmm. And I just felt, listen, if I have the opportunity to try again, to get us back into that, I guess, get us back on the road to take advantage of what is happening in the United States, in the Americas. You'd be shocked to see the statistics of how cricket is growing across the Americas.
Well, I was just about to ask you, I mean, you looking forward, I mean, we're just speaking about how the game has changed in over 20 years. In the next 20 years, you looking forward, do you think our real competition is no longer going to be Australia and India and England, but maybe Canada and the United States and Afghanistan?
You've gone much too far. There's a growing behemoth to the north that whose resources so dwarf the Caribbean. If this thing takes off the way that most people now see that it is taking off, that's called the United States.
Right.
That is the next superpower in the Americas in terms of cricket. The resources that they have. Mm. I tell people, look, when we hosted the matches at Broward County at the stadium, the parking tickets, the prices were higher than any ticket price in the Caribbean for the T20 World Cup. The parking tickets. Mm-hmm. You know, we're just talking about scale and yep. resources and yep. funding that these people have. And then they have this massive population of cricket-loving communities, mm-hmm. cricket-loving countries. Mm-hmm. So there are over 200,000 registered cricketers right now in the United States. There are over 400 leagues.
I'm afraid to ask what is here in the Caribbean.
There are at least 8 to 10 professional leagues
right.
now in the U.S. And we don't even have to look there. Look mm-hmm. at Brazil. My wife is Brazilian, and the other day I shocked her with the statistics. I asked her, how many cricketers do you think are in Brazil? And she goes, none, because Brazil is a football country. I said, Brazil have 72,000 registered cricketers,
wow.
mostly women. Because when we talk about cricket, mm-hmm. we also now have to factor in the women and the incredible growth that side of the game is that's mm-hmm. taking place. Mm-hmm. And we are the ones with the athletes. That was a part that, you know, looking on as somebody at Jamaica and St. Lucian, we would look forward every Olympics, for instance, because we know we're going to dominate, mm-hmm. or we're certainly going to compete. Mm-hmm. But so we have this incredible athletic quotient in the yes. Caribbean, especially in the women. Yet our women are being left behind as well. And so we can't allow that to happen. So, you know, there are youngsters like Azeda James and Keanu Joseph and so on. Those are not accidents, mm-hmm. but they're being produced without the same level of resources mm-hmm. as the United States are able to put into their women. So we need to make sure that we retool our production pipeline, take advantage of every athlete that's coming off the production pipeline. When I look at boys and girls championships in Jamaica, our girls under 15 final, every one of those girls are going to be running times that will be in the national record in 70% of the world's countries.
Wow.
That's mm-hmm. the kind of athletic talent we have right. in the Caribbean. Right. And I'm sure if you did the same in St. Lucia, in Trinidad, in Barbados, you'd probably find that high level mm-hmm. of athletic quotient. Mm-hmm. But there's no pipeline, there's no conveyor belt to pull them into cricket. Develop it, hone it all the way through to the professional ranks, mm-hmm. where there's now such tremendous opportunity for professional cricketers, mm-hmm. male and female. Mm-hmm. So we just have to make sure that we put in place a production pipeline, have the incentives to pull those athletes back into cricket, certainly to cricket for the first time, really, in women's cricket. And I think the results will be there for all to see.
How do you see the Caribbean, the West Indies, leveraging this, though? I mean, this very strong history, legacy of cricket, understanding the sport, and seeing the potential for growth in our next-door neighbor of the United States.
It starts with leadership. So governments of the Caribbean have to first recognize that this is not just sport anymore. This is not the cricket that they knew. That's the first thing. You have to recognize that this is not the cricket that you knew. The industry is a massive, modern, technologically driven industry. And once you understand that, then you position the West Indies to take advantage of that industry. But if you think of West Indies cricket just in isolation, hey, we used to do it this way, so let's continue to do it this way after 50 years, and you're going to get the same result. Well, there's no professional sport in the world who prepares their athletes the same way today as they did 50 years ago. You don't create a professional golfer today the way Jack Nicklaus was prepared. Tiger Woods came along and showed you there is a different way. You know, the professional, you know, strength and conditioning training, and, you know, golfers now today are built, you know, to to swing at how much miles an hour and so on. And they're built from childhood. You can't wait till they're 18, 19. It's almost too late. They're built from 5, 6. They're put on the train at 9. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. by the so that by the time the train reaches the station at
18, that 10,000 hour principle.
Yes, at 18 you have a honed professional athlete. Mm-hmm. Tennis players are built the same way. Golfers are built the same way. Soccer players are built the same way. Arsenal Academy takes in 72 6-year-olds every year into their academy. Mm-hmm. You know, and the scouts will tell you they've identified them really from 4 and 5 years old to get into the academy at 6.
Right.
And then they're built. And so we have to find a way to retool. And that's what's basically happening across the world, in India, in England, and so on. Mm-hmm. When you see the kind of facilities they have, the input from very early, nutrition, physical development, strength and conditioning, technique, of course. Mm-hmm. You know, Arsene Wenger will tell you, if you're a budding footballer and your technique isn't perfected by your 14, you will never be a professional footballer.
Oh, have we been taking this for granted, though? And maybe that, I mean, you exactly said it. We've pretty much
abundance of natural talent
has
spoiled. This athletic quotient that I spoke to you about, abundance of natural talent. But in the modern professional paradigm, you have to hone that abundance of natural talent professionally with the techniques so that, you know, when I went to South Africa, I worked in the South Africa Cricket World Cup in 2002. And when Ali Bako sent around the names of the various practice facilities that each team was assigned to. Beside the West Indies that had Brian Lara and Courtney Walsh, and you know, we had a great team, Ambrose and so on, he had a high school facility. And I flew around to Ali Bako's office in a rage and threw it down and said, Ali, what kind of is this? Mm-hmm. And he said, no, Chris, you don't understand. That's the high school that Jack Callis and Herschel Gibbs went to. When we get down there, I'll have my driver take you down to see this facility so you can assure the West Indies Cricket Board that these are first-class practice facilities. Mm-hmm. But when I got down there, I was down in Cape Town, driving through the gates, I could not believe this was a high school, because in my mind, I'm thinking of a high school in the Caribbean, eh?
It's probably larger than Mona, isn't it?
The gates alone, I was like, wow. Mm. Then we drove past 3 cricket fields, each of which was better than any cricket ground in the Caribbean. At that point, we hadn't redeveloped yet, and none of those were all practice facilities. Mm. We got to the last 2 cricket fields, both of them had lights, pavilions. And no, we had no cricket ground in the Caribbean at that point that had lights. This is a high school, and so you imagine their inter-form match under the lights and so on. And then they took us to the practice facilities, which weren't on the field, they were behind the field, a massive practice. You know, I'd never seen anything like it. 14 nets, they had an indoor facility where the little fellows with, you know, all bowling machines were all lined up and so on. And I said, my goodness, this is 2002.
you're saying this, 2002, but fast forward to 2025.
There is now.
Is there anything like that, though, even in the Caribbean right now?
There are some facilities that have developed. There's no question about it.
At that level?
Not at the level in the high schools. Mm. We do have high-performance centers.
Right.
We have to retool them, make sure they're up to scratch in terms of technology. There's new technology coming out every day.
Artificial intelligence,
in terms of working out flaws of batsmen, flaws in bowlers. Artificial intelligence that generates strategies based on statistics, you know. So there's a whole host of things now because of the fantastic amount of money that has come into the game that the Caribbean, really because of our size, has been deprived of. Mm-hmm. I tell people, when we ruled the roost, when we beat the world in the 80s, the revenue differential, commercial, between West Indies Cricket Board and an English Cricket Board, an Indian cricket board, would have been 10 or 12 million US a year. Mm-hmm. That's it. Mm-hmm. It was some gate receipts. Mm-hmm. Television came into the game in the late 80s, early 90s. From that point, the gap commercially was about 200 million. Today, the gap with India is 3 billion. So it's not rocket science. You know, one country is able to put in 3 billion US a year into their cricket and cricket infrastructure, and one has little or nothing.
And of course, we've also seen that as a challenge, though, as well, because many of our players seem to want to gravitate
are migrating to the franchise cricket. Money talks.
Yeah.
Money talks. And you can't blame them. This is their opportunity to earn revenues from the skills that they have. So we need to find a way, much like other countries have with other sports, to harness that those resources. Because there's no question in my mind that, yes, a Dwayne Bravo and a Karen Pollard and Narayan would have been initially honed in the Caribbean, but they certainly were professionally developed by the IPL. Mm-hmm. So much so that we won two Cricket World Cups with them. You know, you see a Jamaica football team now, they're all playing professional football in England. So it's how do we harness that?
Right.
It is a tricky balance that you have to make, because you also have domestic cricket you need to develop. You need to have players playing against the youngsters to develop them and so on. Mm-hmm. I always tell people, look, when I was playing youth cricket for Jamaica, I batted at number 3 for Jamaica, youth. But in my senior cup team, that's my domestic league, I couldn't make that team. Jeffrey Dujon was batting at number 6. in my club team, Kingston Club. So how was I going to get a game? You know, that's how strong it was. But at least I got to practice with them. So you knew the kind of level that you had to get to. Mm-hmm. So you can't have all your pros playing overseas. You have to have some pros playing against your youngsters and so on.
And certainly this past weekend, and there's a tour going on right now for West Indies A against South Africa A.
Playing so right here. It gives them exposure against... So it allows them to measure where they are against their competitors, their future competitors. Mm-hmm. Again, the example I would always give is Xavier Marshall. I don't know if you remember that youngster, that name. He played for the West Indies. But when Xavier played at under 15 level for the West Indies, we won the World Cup, the under 15 World Cup. And Xavier was rated the number one cricketer in the world. He came out number one in that tournament and was awarded as such. Fast forward 3 or 4 years later, West Indies under 19 goes to the World Cup, and Xavier is in that team. And again, he's head and shoulders above everybody in that World Cup and got that same award, most outstanding cricketer and so on. But you know who else was in that World Cup? Alistair Cook. The difference was when Alistair comes back to England, he goes back to Essex, the club that he has been with since he was maybe like 8 or 9, continuous professional development. Xavier comes back to the hills of St. Anne, where he plays some club cricket on the weekend, does nothing during the week. But he's good enough because of this athletic quotient I tell you about to get into the West Indies team.
Right.
Same time, Alistair Cook comes back into the England team, gets into the England team. But they're both 22 or 23, but they're two totally different professionals.
Wow.
One is a true professional cricketer, one is a youngster with a lot of talent. Well, we didn't hear much of Xavier.
Remarkable story. Thanks for sharing with us on that one. And I mean, that point that you're making, of course, the need to create these environments at the club level, at the local level, is no doubt a message that you're going to be bringing across
Absolutely.
To all the various territories right now. In fact, just over the weekend, I think we saw the finals of a cricket semi-professional league, which they're trying to start right here in St. Lucia.
And you have a sports academy, which is that is another great start, and you're seeing some
actually
of the
just last week we interviewed two up-and-coming form four students from that academy as well. And yeah, definitely that's what they're
that
looking
to
do.
That is what we need across the region. Very similar facilities and approach.
You, of course, are going to be meeting with some of the leaders there. I think the Prime Minister tomorrow.
Yeah, we met with
the
Minister of Sport yesterday. Tomorrow morning, I'm meeting with the Prime Minister and having breakfast with my old colleague who ran the Cricket World Cup here, who is now the Deputy Prime Minister.
Dr. Hilaire, yes.
Dr. Hilaire. So I know that cricket is near and dear to his heart and so on. Mm-hmm. I've met with Coach Sammy before he went off to England, you know, to get an understanding of the principles and the sort of approach that we now need to implement, and I'm asked for his help to see what is out there in the world. Those of us who are touring around the world, seeing the facilities, need to bring them here. There's no need to reinvent the wheel. Just, you know, imitation is the best form of flattery. Mm-hmm. And it allows us the opportunity to try and get ahead of our competitors. See what's the next best thing, technology, what's the next best techniques that are being implemented and so on. It's a new world out there, and we need to, you know, take advantage of it.
Do you think passion still matters, though? I mean, in the midst of the training,
it's
the
a different passion. I will tell you this: let us not fool ourselves. The passion that would have driven my parents to overcome British colonial rule is not the same passion that's going to drive today's youngster who never knew British colonial rule, even in its you know, its aftermath. It's such a long time ago. So the idea that you're going to be able to motivate kids that way by talking about what an important institution West Indies cricket is, how we beat the English, I don't think it's going to work. What does work, and one of the reasons that we've launched, for instance, our Olympic bid, our Olympic program, to make sure the West Indies have representation at the Olympics, because cricket is now back in the Olympics. It is a massive passion generator, the Olympics. It is a dream of kids as we watch, you know, a Julian Alfred or Shelley Ann Fraser Price or Usain Bolt take home Olympic glory. It pulls so many kids into the track and field production line. This is now an opportunity to create a cricket Olympic production line.
Now, will this be on a country basis?
It's on a country basis.
Every country is going to be able to.
So what we're campaigning, and we've written to the ICC to ensure that the West Indies is not left out, whatever qualification process, what we are saying is, sure, the West Indies are not able to compete because we are individually members of the IOC. But if we qualify, one of our countries is going to represent us. So if you can imagine that FA Cup style draw between and St. Lucia is going to play off against Antigua and Barbados is going to play off against Jamaica. And one country is going to get to represent us in the Olympics. That is our campaign. And we're asking everybody in the Caribbean to support this campaign. What we've said to the ICC and the IOC is that we are Olympic royalty here in the Caribbean. You cannot have cricket in the Olympics and we don't even have a chance to qualify. In fact, we are used by the IOC to exemplify the Olympic ideal and spirit. And did you know that? Because we're this tiny part of the world that you give us a chance to compete on the world stage and we beat you all. The IOC sells us as a demonstration of the true greatness of the Olympic spirit.
Yes.
A Julian Alfred can come from 180,000 people, less than 2% of New York or London. And we beating you all. Shelley Ann Fraser, Usain Bolt. So the Caribbean is incredibly admired. We're Olympic royalty. And so you cannot have cricket in the Olympics and we not have the opportunity to qualify just by virtue of the fact that we play together as the West Indies. We're also individually IOC members and we will decide who represents the West Indies.
So that's the 3-year vision, of course. Hopefully we can get to that.
Yeah, but remember, Olympic qualification could start very shortly.
Okay.
You know, the Olympics is in 2028. The IOCC is going to determine how they do this Olympic qualification process. So as early as next year, you could start an Olympic qualification process. And so that's where individual countries know, hey, St. Lucian government has incentive to help spur a St. Lucian cricket team because they join Julian on the Olympic podium. And the truth is in 2020 we can be competitive individually. I'm convinced about that. In the short forms of the game, it's no different from Jamaica playing Brazil in scrimmage football. You know, it's not the same as playing them on the big field.
I mean, it would be really interesting to see whether a couple Caribbean teams could actually make it into
and it would be a great incentive. Whilst we still stay together as the West Indies playing in World Cups, we play as the West Indies in Test cricket and one day international. But hey, every 4 years we know the Olympics is happening, and if we have that qualification process carved in stone that we have the chance to qualify, I think that would be also that sort of passion and motivation to get kids to continue to play cricket.
Mr. Daring, we're already over time, unfortunately. But of course, coming up soon, I think you've got a series starting.
Yeah, we have a couple of series. Yeah. Very shortly, June 11th, the whole campaign for the summer is Full of Energy campaign with Michael Tasia, wonderful song. So you'll be hearing that a lot on the radio. Hopefully you'll be pushing it. And we're playing South Africa, the women first, take on South Africa in the white ball series starting June 11th. June 25th is the first test against Australia and Barbados. Hoping everybody comes out. St. Lucians need to travel to Barbados to support our team. Obviously, it's much, you have a greater chance of getting an LBW decision when 10,000 people are roaring that appeal. Yes. And the last time we played Australia, we beat them. So we're looking forward to that.
Sounds awesome. And hopefully we can keep chatting, of course. The importance of dialogue and focus on West Indies cricket is always very, very useful. Mr. Chris Dering, thank you so very much for being our guest here today at the Lunchroom, CEO of West Indies Cricket.
Thank you.
And of course, that's our program here today at the Lunchroom on Radio Caribbean International. Have a great one.